We continue now with the story of the famous Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, Rav Mordechai HaTzadik, who had gone to seek out his two friends of the yeshiva days, Rav Chaim and Rav Yisrael Ber, in order to enlighten them about the derech of the Baal Shem Tov, the path of the Baal Shem, how he had met Rav Chaim and had transmitted to him Moitzoy Yom Kippur, the message that was intended to for him from the holy Baal Shem Tov, and the great effect it had on Rav Chaim. And we continue now with the depiction of the city of Dubrovna and how it was totally transformed during that month of Tishrei, when the Mordechai HaTzadik was acting as the town magid. The previous installment we had spoken about the night of Moitzoy Yom Kippur, the songs that were taught by Rav Mordechai, the transmission of the message to Rav Chaim, and the words of inspiration that he spoke to the young men about their limuda Torah, about how one should study Torah. And then we go now on to the next day. After the sunrise minyan ended, the Vasikim minyan, for the first time, Rav Mordechai informed everyone that it is proper to go to the mikveh to immerse oneself before davening, before prayers. Being reluctant to begin a lengthy explanation about the significance of mikveh before davening, Rav Mordechai invited all the Jews and the young folk who were his close adherents to come to him in the Beis HaMedrash that afternoon before Mincha. He promised that then he would explain to them about the subject of tefillah b'mikveh, of immersion in the mikveh in general, and especially the importance of going to the mikveh before prayer. When hearing these few words from Rav Mordechai about going to the mikveh before davening, many decided to do so immediately, without waiting to learn the reasons for it. They accompanied Rav Mordechai and Rav Chaim to the mikveh, and this procession caused much wonder among the townsfolk who were making their way to the study houses to daven. Just what were the Magid and Rav Chaim Porush doing, marching up River Street toward the bathhouse, with several minyonim of people following them? The Beryl Ivansker quoted Rav Hirsch Ben Sholem's description of the scene. On the day of B'Shem Hashem, on the day of God's name, the day after Yom Kippur is called God's name, the Dubrovna Jews, not suspecting that Rav Mordechai was in the process of making them and transforming them to Hasidim, went to the mikveh for the first time in preparation for davening. On his way back from the mikveh, Rav Chaim began to think about his dead Gemara pages, his mitzvahs performed without inner kavona, without inner intent, and his davening without neshama, without soul, to which Rav Mordechai had referred the night before in his inspirational speech to the young men. Chaim grew very frightened as he contemplated these things, until he finally decided to discuss the whole matter with Rav Mordechai. That was why he started the davening late that day. Rav Mordechai had spent several hours discussing with him the topic of the Sulam, the ladder of Yankov's dream, which represents prayer, as the Zohar says, Sulam dot Sloisa, that the ladder is the ladder of prayer. Our service of prayer controls the ascending and descending of the angels that are created by the words of our davening and study. This, Rav Mordechai told Rav Chaim, is the meaning of Yankov's dream. Yankov was on his way to Choron to achieve a new sort of spiritual service in serving Hashem, and heaven was hinting to him what his program of avodah should be. It all depended on the ladder of his prayer. That day of God's name was the first time that Rav Chaim's davening followed the new, as far as he was concerned, path of Hasidus. He began his preparations for davening, having taken to heart Rav Mordechai's lecture about the Sulam, the ladder of tefillah, of prayer. Since the previous day when he had received the message that the holy Baal Shem Tov had sent to him through Rab Mordechai, Rab Chaim had known no peace. He could not stop thinking about the expanded emotional capacities he would achieve through the program of study of Zohar and Medrash that the Baal Shem Tov would teach him. Rab Chaim's mind worked feverishly, and ideas raced through his head. One moment he felt himself longing for the time when he could finally go to see the Baal Shem Tov and obtain this program of study of Zohar and Medrash that would expand his emotional capacities to serve the Creator. The next moment he questioned how he could possibly undertake a journey to such a distant place, a journey that would certainly take at least several months. What about the burning coals with which he would be punished for the sin of neglecting his Torah study? But then, Reb Chaim reminded himself about the many years he had yearned for an open heart and expanded emotional capacities to serve Hashem. God, blessed be he, was certainly aware of this. He had therefore commanded the tzaddik to send a message inviting Reb Chaim to come to him. When he came, the tzaddik would teach him a program of study of Zohar and Medrash, and he would thereby expand his emotional capacities to serve the Creator. After all, it was God himself who knows all hidden things, who had informed the tzaddik that Reb Chaim needed expanded emotional capacities to serve him. Thus, Reb Chaim's journey to the tzaddik to obtain the program of study would be perfectly legitimate. He would not be guilty of the sin of neglecting Torah study. By the time Reb Chaim actually began to daven, it was past 8:30 in the morning. This was the first time in his life that he had davened so late. Reb Mordechai, by contrast, would frequently daven at even a later hour. It would often happen that he would pace back and forth or sit deep in thought and immersed in his meditations with his talus over his shoulders before he even examined the tzitzis and wrapped himself in his talus. Only then would Reb Mordechai inspect the tzitzis, unfold the talus, and wrap it around himself. Then he would remain seated for some time before he proceeded to put on his tefillin. Reb Mordechai did not do anything without an enormous amount of prior reflection. He might spend several hours meditating in preparation before he began to pray. Reb Chaim, on the other hand, always davened with the sunrise minyan, even after he had begun studying Kabbalah. It is true that studying Kabbalah had a great effect on Reb Chaim's davening, lifting its quality and causing him to daven much more slowly than before. But the time at which Reb Chaim started his prayers remained unchanged. He still began davening with the Vasikin Minyan, with the early sunrise Minyan. When the Jews assembled for Chatzos, for the midnight prayers in the gravediggers' Beis HaMedrash, on the night after Yom Kippur, and found that Reb Chaim with Porush was absent, they thought it very strange. Every Shabbos and Yom Tov after nightfall, as soon as Havdalah was recited in the Beis HaMedrash, Reb Chaim would remove his Shabbos and Yom Tov clothes and remain in the Beis HaMedrash. Even after Yom Kippur, Reb Chaim would break his fast in the Beis HaMedrash. But today, he was not there for Chatzos, for the midnight prayers. When the Chevra Tila members, when the members of the recitation of Psalms community discovered that Reb Chaim Porush was still not in the gravediggers' Beis HaMedrash, they became worried. For the first time in many years, the Vasikin Minyan, the Sunrise Minyan, began to daven without Reb Chaim Porush. Everyone was indeed aware that Reb Chaim Porush had undergone a radical change since the Shabbos following Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. Not only had he changed his eccentric manners, he now walked by himself without someone leading him, and he even now in the daytime went around without a blindfold over his eyes, but more than that, he had undergone a major revolution in everything he did. His davening was different, his study was different. He finished davening very late and spent much more time davening than he had previously, but he was still started his davening with the sunrise minyan, and today he was not here. when Rav Chaim finally arrived at the Beis HaMedrash, he found that none of the worshippers remained. The only person present was the old blind Shamus, who sat behind the bima reciting Tehillim. As for Rav Mordechai, he proceeded according to his usual schedule. He made his preparations in solitary conclusion, and then he davened slowly, humming various nigunim from time to time. He completely ignored the fact that he had not slept for even a short while during the previous two nights. He had not so much as nodded from midnight before Yom Kippur until that moment, and had been hard at work during all those three nights and 2 days. Nevertheless, Rav Mordechai davened with such enthusiasm that his whole being seemed to boil over. Somehow, that day's davening was very special, and it took longer even than Rav Mordechai's usual long davening. Rav Mordechai's conduct of the previous night, his lecture, the singing, and the dancing, all made a profound impression on the older scholarly Jews. It also caused a full-fledged revolution among the younger scholars. Somehow, the idea had firmly implanted itself in everyone's mind that there existed a far higher intellectual plane of Torah study than they had been aware of previously. Rav Mordechai's Moshel, his parable and metaphor about a vast cemetery filled with the corpses of your dead pages of Gemara, is what you've built up in the world of truth, penetrated into the minds of all the scholars, young and old, and had a profound effect upon all of them. Every one of the genuine scholars took it personally and was deeply moved, for in fact, Rav Mordechai was right. He had hit the mark and was telling the truth. Everyone was prompted to take action and do better in the future, and to find ways of atoning for the past. For this purpose, many of the young folk decided that they should discuss the matter with Rav Mordechai. The entire town was astir with rumors of what had transpired with the Maggid the previous evening in the large Beis HaMedrash. Everyone spoke about it and repeated the story. Everywhere in town, in the houses, on the sidewalk, in front of the stores, on the balconies, and on the porches, people could not stop talking about it. Each person had his own version and interpretation of the events, and described the previous night's incidents according to his own inclination and imagination. The stories grew to such an extent that they astonished all who heard them. One person related that the Maggid had davened extensively on Yom Kippur, his prayers extending far into the night. As a result, Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet, had come to visit the Maggid. Rav Chaim Parush, by means of Ruach HaKodesh, had seen Eliyahu HaNavi going to the Maggid in the large Beis HaMedrash, so he himself had also gone to visit Rav Mordechai. All three of them, Eliyahu HaNavi, the Maggid, and Rav Chaim, had danced together, and so vigorously had they danced that the wall of the Maggid's room had collapsed. Another person related that while davening on Yom Kippur, the Maggid had visited the cemetery in the world of truth. There he had clearly seen the Talmudic sages sitting in chains while angels of terror buried the dead Gemara pages. As a result, the Maggid had cried so much during the davening and had davened until so late at night that the Master of the Universe had released the Tzaddikim from their chains. This caused the Maggid so much joy that he had danced with Rav Chaim Parush. The Jews who frequented the Beis HaMedrash and the young scholars began to assemble for the study session, but they too could speak only about the dead Gemara pages and the chains of vanity and arrogance. A few of the young folk in Bochram who had heard the search and finding sang it repeatedly and practiced it over and over again. Eventually, Yisrael Nachman Mayashes arrived. This young Yisrael Nachman was a great scholar and very God-fearing. Upon hearing the Maggid's and Yankov lesson for the first time, he had immediately become the Maggid's devoted follower. Rabbi Yisrael Nachman was one of the most influential people in the city, especially among the prominent citizens. As the only son-in-law of the wealthy widow Maryasha, he did many philanthropic acts and contributed generously to all charities. Yisrael Nachman led the prayers in the Kalten Beis HaMedrash, having inherited this position from his father-in-law, a tzaddik and martyr who had been drowned. Yisrael Nachman had a very delicate constitution, and he had to lie down to rest for a while immediately after the fast ended. Later, he had an irresistible urge to go and see what the Maggid was doing. When he arrived, he discovered that the Maggid had just started davening Ma'ariv, while Reb Chaim Porush was among the men telling wonderful stories that he had heard from the Maggid about the great tzaddik of Alinya Podolia. Yisrael Nachman had always had the greatest respect for Reb Chaim Porush and held him in high esteem. Yisrael Nachman, however, was by nature a cheerful and lively individual, and he could not put up with Reb Chaim Porush's ways. Reb Chaim Porush's perpetually sad and melancholy disposition, his drooping eyebrows, his silence, and the way he always sat in the dark with his eyes blindfolded, all this angered Yisrael Nachman. But now, seeing Reb Chaim Porush engaged in casual conversation with other people, Yisrael Nachman was very impressed. He was, however, still exhausted from the fast and was simply unable to remain even long enough for the Maggid to finish Ma'ariv. He was forced to go home and rest. When he got home, he sent his butler to find out what was happening in the large Beis HaMedrash. When the butler returned with the news that the Maggid and Reb Chaim Porush were dancing in the Maggid's room, Yisrael Nachman was unable to restrain himself and went to the large Beis HaMedrash together with the butler. He arrived while they were still dancing, the crowd still pressing its way into the Maggid's chamber. The heavy pushing and the intense heat, however, had proved too much for Yisrael Nachman's constitution, and Yisrael Nachman had begun to feel quite ill and felt the need to return home. Yisrael Nachman was greatly distressed at having to return home. He was unable to rest and kept sending the butler to find out what was happening at that moment. But the butler was not the brightest person and was unable to give Yisrael Nachman any clear account. Apparently, Yisrael Nachman had caught a very bad cold. His throat was sore and his sides ached. It was long past midnight when he sent for Dr. Lippe, requesting him to come to his house and bring his medications. Dr. Lippe examined Yisrael Nachman thoroughly and found that his illness was not really that serious. Nevertheless, to speed his recovery, especially in view of the fact that Sukkot was approaching, Dr. Lippe took extreme measures and gave him various types of medications. The next afternoon, Dr. Lippe came to examine Yisrael Nachman again and was very satisfied with the progress he had made thanks to the medications. He gave Yisrael Nachman permission to go to the Beis HaMedrash for a few hours on condition that he return home before sunset. When Yisrael Nachman arrived at the Beis HaMedrash, he found a few young folks present. From them he heard an accurate account of what had occurred in the large Beis HaMedrash, and the Maggid's lecture comparing mitzvahs performed without their inner kavona to a body without a neshama to a body without a soul. The young men repeated to Yisrael Nachman everything the Maggid had said, and they sang the niggun the Maggid had taught them. Yisrael Nachman was beside himself for not having heard and seen all this from the Maggid himself. They sang the niggun repeatedly, but Yisrael Nachman could not get enough of it. However, after they had been at it for several hours, he knew it well and could sing it by himself. In the Kalten Beis HaMedrash, there were 10 scholars who had sat there studying day and night for many years. They were supported at public expense, and most of the money came from Yisrael Nachman's mother-in-law. When the young folk began singing, these 10 scholars were greatly angered by the young men's foolishness, their waste of time that should have been spent studying Torah, and by the disturbance they were causing. Since Yisrael Nachman was together with these young folk, however, the elders had to remain silent inside themselves, but they were very angry. These young folk who frequented the Kalten Beis HaMedrash remembered that Rav Mordechai had invited them to visit him in the large Beis HaMedrash before Mincha, when he would lecture on the topic of the pre-davening mikveh. They prepared to go now, though it was only a little while after 3:00 in the afternoon. When Yisrael Nachman heard that the young men were planning to visit the Maggid and learn the inner meaning of a religious practice dictated by Kabbalah, Rabbi Yisrael Nachman was unable to restrain himself. He decided to accompany them in spite of the inclement weather, and despite that he had this cold, he would put on his best jacket, his warm underwear, and a pair of fancy felt boots, and would run to the Beis HaMedrash with a scarf around his head. No harm could possibly come of this. Once he got there, he would see how he felt. Just then, one of the young folk who learned in the large Beis HaMedrash came running in, all out of breath. This young man was called Yosik. I hurried over here, said Yosik to the young men, to invite you to come to the large Beis HaMedrash to hear and see the Maggid davening. In all our days, we've never heard or seen such davening. Upon hearing this information, the young folk began to run. The 10 elderly scholars, seeing the young men come running in, all out of breath, the tumult that ensued as soon as he said a few words, and a few of the young folk running out in haste, while those who remained also appeared quite preoccupied, came to the conclusion that a fire must have broken out. With a shout, they ran to the holy ark to rescue the Torah scrolls. Rabbi Yisrael Nachman and Rabbi Yosik saw the elders shouting and running toward the holy ark. At first, they could not guess what the elders were doing. But when they saw them opening the ark and snatching the Torah scrolls, they became frightened to death. What happened? Rabbi Yisrael Nachman and Rabbi Yosik began to scream. What are you doing? Why are you handling the Torah scrolls needlessly? Fire! Shouted the elders. We're trying to save the Torah scrolls. Where's the fire? Asked Rabbi Yisrael Nachman and Rabbi Yosik. Where are the flames? Where's the smoke? Well, we saw the young folk running, said the elders, so we assumed that there was a fire. If there's no fire, why were they running? After the elders had calmed down, Rabbi Yosik continued telling Rabbi Yisrael Nachman all about how the Maggid had davened that day. Rabbi Yisrael Nachman listened with his mouth open in disbelief. Forgetting that he was sick, he went away to the large Beis HaMedrash with Rabbi Yosik. On the way, he met Rabbi Errol Shamas, who was the son of the old Shamas of the Gravedigger Shul, and one of the Maggid's most faithful followers. After the sunrise minyan, I went for a short walk in the street, and then I went to the large Beis HaMedrash, said Rabbi Errol Shamas. I listened to the Maggid's davening, and I remained until just now, forgetting that I have not yet brought my father, the old blind Shamas, his breakfast. What can I tell you when you hear such davening, and you observe the Maggid's face? You forget everything else. Nevertheless, said Rabbi Yosik, you committed a grave wrong. You might forget your own needs, but not someone else's needs, especially not those of your old blind father who can't even move without assistance. Rabbi Errol Shamas hastened and ran into a store where he purchased a herring. From there, he rushed home, took some bread and yogurt, and went to the Beis HaMedrash. Upon entering the Beis HaMedrash, he paused in amazement, for this was the first time in all the years he knew him that he saw Rabbi Chaim Parash davening so late. And what's more, he was davening out loud. Now, Rabbi Errol Shamas was aware that Rabbi Chaim Parash had been studying Kabbalah for quite some time, and that since the arrival of the Maggid, Rabbi Chaim had become a different person. He had come alive. The Maggid had done a real mitzvah, for he had changed a corpse into a human being. But to see Rabbi Chaim Parash davening so late, well, that was truly a marvel. While thinking these thoughts, he walked over to the place behind the bima where the old blind Shamas sat, reciting some words in a whisper. Father, please don't be angry, said Rabbi Errol Shamas to his father. I'm a little late in bringing you breakfast. Don't be angry, father. Please forgive me. You say you're late, said the old Shamas. What does the Gemara say? This teaches us that the Holy One, blessed be He, gives to each and every one his sustenance in its due time. What does it matter if you're late? Even if you weren't late, would it have made a difference? Each person's food arrives at the exact time that the Creator wills it. The old Shamas washed his hands while Rabbi Errol told him that at 11 o'clock he had passed by the large Beis HaMedrash and decided to go inside and see what was happening. In the marketplace, he had heard that they had been up all night in the large Beis HaMedrash, but he had been unable to find out exactly what had taken place there. He had therefore decided to enter the Beis HaMedrash, where he might find someone who would inform him about the previous night's events. When I entered the large Beis HaMedrash, Beryl told his father, I met several people there. When I asked them about it, they told me that, and he told the whole story to his father about Rav Chaim and Rav Mordechai. Afterwards, said Rav Beryl, I remained standing there for a while, listening to the Maggid davening. It was so delightful to hear that I completely lost track of time, and I had no idea it had grown so late. Here, I heard a sound as if someone were both singing and crying, said the old shamus. First, I heard the sound of someone loudly weeping in the side room, but when I asked who's there, I received no reply. I continued saying my tillim, after which I studied my mishnayos. Then I heard someone singing, but once again, when I asked who's there singing, I again received no reply. At first, I was a bit frightened. By this crying and singing. But I ceased to pay attention to it and immersed myself in Mishnayos, and then I was no longer afraid. That's Reb Chaim Porsche davening. He has been living in the side room for many years, said Reb Beryl Shamus. I've never seen him, said the old Shamus, and I have no idea who he is. True, you've never seen him, but I told you several times about the Porsche who stays here in the side room, neither speaking with people nor looking at them. He enters the Beis HaMedrash only with his eyes closed, and whenever he goes to the restroom, he blindfolds his eyes, and someone has to lead him by the hand. His name is Reb Chaim, and he is a great Gaon. Ah, exclaimed the old Shamus, remembering. Yes, yes, I remember you telling me about the Reb Chaim Porsche. No, so what's become of this Reb Chaim Porsche? Since the Maggid arrived, Reb Beryl Shamus told his father, and they began studying together, Reb Chaim Porsche has become a different person. He then proceeded to give his father a detailed account about all the changes Reb Chaim had undergone. The Maggid is a disciple of a Gaon Tzaddik and a Baal Mephis, a miracle worker of Podolia Volhynia, who is known in that region of the as the Baal Shem Tov. In the interim, Reb Chaim finished his davening and entered the Beis HaMedrash. For some time it had been Reb Chaim's habit to enter the Beis HaMedrash and pace backwards and forwards whenever he wished to think something over carefully. Even in the middle of his study, he would often close the sefer he was studying and begin pacing from one wall to the opposite wall. This might last as long as an hour or two, sometimes even longer. The Beryl Shamus was overjoyed at seeing Reb Chaim, though he could not say why. He had greatly respected Reb Chaim during all the years he had known him, but he had never been able to tolerate his eccentric behavior. However, since Reb Chaim had changed his ways, Reb Beryl Shamus held him in even greater esteem, and he treated him with much reverence. Being in a great hurry, Reb Chaim quickly downed a slice of bread with some water, recited Birchas HaMazon, grace after meals, and left. The Beryl Shamish knew where Reb Chaim Porsche was hurrying to. He was going to the large Beis HaMedrash. Reb Beryl envied Reb Chaim greatly, but there was nothing he could do about it. He had to remain in the gravedigger's Beis HaMedrash until after Mayrif, for it was his turn to teach the Inyankiv lesson between Mincha and Myriff. In the next installment of the story, we'll be relating about those who became Mordechai's followers and adherents, while the others who did not find favor, and the subsequent events.